Wintrust Business Lunch. Just a postscript to the last half hour. We really have hit a nerve the last few days talking about the cost of college and how kids go from high school to college if they do at all. I just wanted to read a few quick texts that have also come in. John, my kid went to Illinois State University. A required course in his major included mock interviews with local business people. Afterward, the person contacted him with a job offer, and years later, he's still working there, has been promoted several times, has good pay and benefits. 773, my high school counselor talked me out of my chosen art college because it was a two-year associate degree, which the counselor deemed worthless. Later in life, when I saw the portfolios of artists who went to that school that I intended to go to, I knew I should have trusted my initial instincts. And one more, John, I graduated from a technical school in 1992 with an associate degree. I learned most of my education on the job and am making more than master's degree holders now. Yeah, I'm a proponent of the two-year school. Everybody's experience is their own, right? My kids went to four-year schools and they enjoyed that. They got a good education. They had a lot more fun maybe than I did at the JC, staying at home, sleeping in the same bed I did in high school. I understand the desire to get away, have fun, and experience life out there. And if you can afford it and your kid can manage it, hooray for you. But I got better learning. I got better teaching at Joliet than I did at the four-year school I went to. And I liked my four-year school, too. It just seems to me to be such an economical, smarter way to do it. And I think that junior college should be free. John, one more year of college means another year of expense and one less year of earning a salary. One of our listeners said she'd rather her kid go to a two-year school, even if that meant he'd be a year behind at the four-year school and had to go three more. She'd rather him spend two at the JC and three at the four-year school if that's the way the numbers worked out. I think the average number of years that a kid going to college goes to college these days, if they graduate, is closer to five than four anyway, right? I don't know what percentage of people graduate in 4 years, but it's not everybody. I think it's more like five or five and a half, to be honest with you, depending on the degree and the kid, and sometimes just the fun the kid is having. Here's an update on the markets right now. Stocks among the most that are moving the most in midday trading today. Macy's shares skyrocketed 16% after Arkhouse Management said it and Brigade Capital Management have raised their offer for the department store. Macy's up 16%. Super Micro Computer, Deckers Outdoor, the technology firm and athletic footwear designer, respectively popped 27%. And nearly 3% after the S&P Dow Jones indices announced Friday the two stocks would be added to the S&P starting on March 18th. And two more, Lyft, the ride-sharing platform, added 6% after RBC upgraded the stock to an outperform rating from sector performance. And DoorDash shares jumped more than 5% after an upgrade of the food delivery company to outperform the sector. Overall, though, Steve, I think you were looking at the markets in general, and the markets are, how are they doing today on the Dow?
Well, today, the Dow is, it's actually been a very flat day, and I get the latest numbers for you here, but the Dow's off about 87 points, which is about a fifth of a percent, and the S&P's down a point. The NASDAQ is down about 30, still very little, but it's been a great run. They've had a rally that has continued since the first of the year. The NASDAQ is up 8.4% year-to-date. The S&P is up about 8.3%. The Dow is up 3.6%. The Russell 2000 Small Cap Exchange is also up about 8.1% year-to-date.
This is one of the numbers I saw along those lines. The NASDAQ marketplace is seen March, let's see here, the NASDAQ 100 has gone more than 300 days without a significant downside. We are enjoying a pretty good run right now. Steve, I'm just looking at a couple of stories here before we get to the bottom of the hour. Anything else you want to maybe shine a light on today?
Yeah, let's talk about Apple a bit. Apple shares, and it's a widely held stock, obviously. Its shares are down more than 3%. Apple got dinged. It's in a big ding in a big way by the EU for, what is it, about $2 billion in fines. And I'm trying to find the rest of that story there. At any rate, shares of Apple are down considerably. And then you mentioned the Supermicro earlier. Shares up, I can't remember what you said today.
27%, I think it was.
They've increased, and it's one of the, Supermicro is one of the AI all-stars, one of the AI darlings. That we've never heard of until now, that their share price has jumped over 20 times in the past 2 years. And more than 200% this year alone so far. So good for you if you bought Supermicro, even at the beginning of the year, but especially 2 years ago when it was probably next to nothing. I'm not sure what the share price is today, but Supermicro is doing just fine.
Do you remember last week you said that in terms of environmental efficiency and road efficiency, the best car to buy is the Toyota Prius SE, I think it was. I don't remember if the word prime was in there or not.
Yeah, there is a prime in there, yeah.
Okay, so just out of curiosity, Brenda and I were driving down the road over the weekend, and we saw a Toyota dealership. So we pulled off the side of the road on a Sunday and just drove up and down the lot. There was one Prius on the lot. I don't know what the availability is of some of these vehicles, but and that's a hybrid. That is a gas electric hybrid, right?
It's a plug-in hybrid, right?
Right, right. I had a Prius once, and that was a hybrid, but of course it wasn't a plug-in. So right. I was kind of intrigued by all of that. I wanted to see the sticker and kick the tires a little bit, and there was only one Prius on the lot of a dealer. And it wasn't even that. I wonder what the availability is of some of those vehicles.
Yeah, it's the Toyota Prius Prime SE.
Yeah.
And I'm just checking the sticker.
The one I saw on the lot was $37,000. But that wasn't a Prime SE.
Well, this one says it's about $35,000.
Which is less than the average car price. It's not a big car. And again, the idea was that it's the one I saw, the sticker said 54 miles to the gallon. You believe that all you want. But you also said that the production of the car had a smaller carbon footprint than other vehicles, too.
Yeah, that was one of the considerations that this organization called American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy. They took into the account how much pollution is generated on the road, as well as how much pollution is created when the vehicle's being manufactured.
Okay. Just wondered how unique my experience was, because sometimes I get the feeling that all of these dealers have not entirely recovered from the pandemic. You do not see as many cars on the lot as you once did. Jim Dahlke joins us once again. You hear him most Mondays on the Wintrust Business Lunch, the national editor at American Inno. You find their stuff at ChicagoInno.com. Welcome back, Jim. How are you?
Hey, John. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Okay, a couple of interesting stories here and some pretty big numbers around them. Chipotle doubles investment in Cultivate Next. Tell me that story.
Yeah, that's right. So, startups today, really have more venture capital firms than ever. It seems like over the last few years, we saw a ton of new venture capital firms launch to write checks and invest in startups. Kind of following the boom of the COVID boom, where startups were just getting more money than ever, and new venture funds launched up, and one is a Chipotle, one that you might not expect. Chipotle, the Mexican restaurant, they've got $100 million now to invest into startups that operate in the food space, restaurant, or agriculture supply chain. This comes on the heels. It raised $50 million when it first launched a couple of years ago, and just doubled that to $100 million now, which was the news last week. So, interesting news here at a Chipotle. You don't think of a fast food restaurant as being a funder of startups, but certainly what's happening here And so they've invested in a handful of startups so far. None from Chicago yet, but Chicago, you know, as you and I have talked about often on Mondays here, Chicago's a big food startup scene, lots of food startups in town. So, you know, the fact that there's another investment firm that's dedicated to backing specifically food startups could be good news for Chicago's tech startup scene.
Right. But that's, I'm trying to get my head around that. So rather than acquiring investor monies, Chipotle is the investor in other businesses. Are the businesses food related? Are they like new restaurant concepts? Do you know where the money's going, what it's going to do?
Yeah. So, I mean, their investments are definitely in food businesses, and it's really kind of across the board. You know, one investment they have is in a Kansas startup that's building an agricultural robotics company. Another one in California is working on renewable fertilizer. Another company in California that they've invested in is based on food automation and technology, and another company with sustainable oils and fats. So it's kind of around, really kind of a range of different types of food companies, both from, you know, how we farm the food to, you know, how it's developed and processed. And so, yeah, I mean, really they're investing in startups really across the board. And, you know, this is an opportunity, you know, for a company that can invest it by Chipotle, not to just get cash, right, but also kind of testing your products with a sort of a blue chip customer. So, you know, it's kind of an advantage that you see in corporate venture capital. As you compare it to traditional venture capital, right, it's not just the check, it's not just the money in the bank that's going to help you grow your business. You also get, you know, a big, you know, commercial client, a big partner who's going to be able to use your technology, and that's going to hopefully help these companies continue to grow.
I wonder if part of the investment will go to businesses that make alternative meat products.
Yeah, I mean, I'm certain that that's something that Chipotle is probably looking at. I'm not familiar with their alternative meat strategy per se, but certainly every major fast food company is looking into that. I mean, we've certainly seen that at, you know, Burger King, McDonald's.
I thought that was going to happen. We've had a run. It's 12:39. That's Jim Dahlke. There's another story at ChicagoWinnow.com, and that is about Southwest Airlines has invested $30 million in a Chicago clean energy startup. So let's start there now. This Southwest Airlines investment. Talk to us about that, Jim.
Yeah, so the clean energy startup. So one here in Chicago called LanzaJet. They got $30 million from Southwest Airlines. A nice little chunk of change here for the Chicago startup, a clean energy company that's working to develop new sustainable aviation fuel. So what they do is they take alcohol and turn it into jet fuel. They've got some really, you know, global ambitions here from a company just based in Chicago. And they've got plants opening really all over the world. They've got two projects in Japan. They've got one in India, Australia, New Zealand, and the UK as well. And so, you know, really what this firm is able to do and really kind of continue to make, you know, the jet fuel industry greener. And, you know, what they said is that about 1% of the aviation industry right now is using sustainable aviation fuel. And the goal is the industry wants to get up to about 10% by 2030. So they think that they've got a lot of room to grow here. And another $30 million in the bank from Southwest Airlines is going to help them do that.
Peter Greenberg's travel show on WGN Radio over the weekend was talking to a president of a private jet company. They were talking about electric jets and electric hybrid jets, kind of like cars. And I thought, I don't know if I like that, but it seemed to make sense. It would be, and it's some of the same issues were at play. Like, you can only go so far on a charge in your car. You can only go so far on a charge on an airplane. But if you're going to go from Chicago to St. Louis or Chicago to Milwaukee, I don't know why you would do that. But some of these shorter routes, Minneapolis maybe, hybrid jets are a thing. I don't know if you've heard much about that, but that's intriguing too, isn't it?
That's right, and there are definitely startups that are working on that. You know, that's a big part of you know, Silicon Valley right now. These are kind of these, you know, quote moonshot type startup ideas that, you know, are many companies are kind of taking swings at. And really, at the end of the day, it's going to come down to consumer confidence. You know, how confident are you stepping into an electric aircraft, right? And I think that we're, you know, we're still certainly not quite there yet, especially as, you know, these startups are still continuing to get their products off the ground. And so, yeah, at the end of the day, you know, the confidence that the consumer has to have in these startups is paramount, and we'll see how the industry takes it from there.
You got another AI story, too. Tell us about Figure AI.
Yeah, speaking of moonshot startups, this is a startup called Figure AI out in the Bay Area. They have created a humanoid robot for the factory floor. So this is a 5.5-foot-tall, 130-pound robot that looks very human-like. And really the goal is to kind of be this robot, automated robot, artificial intelligence in the warehouse to tackle, you know, the warehouse logistics and all kinds of warehouse issues that you might have. They signed actually a deal with BMW to explore potential use cases for bringing their robots to BMW's factory. So the funding round here, $675 million, pretty significant. Also in the who has funded this company. So the backers include OpenAI, of course, the big giant AI maker behind ChatGPT. Jeff Bezos, also a funder in the startup Figure AI. So, yeah, you know, you can expect to see Figure AI's human-like robots in a factory near you before too long.
What do you know or think about how the robots should look? I mean, robotics, that's, you know, mechanical automation of tasks that we all do. How important is it that they look like human beings? Because I don't think we're designed to do a lot of the things that we do, like lift boxes. I don't, and it, frankly, it creeps me out a little bit. What's your thought about that?
I actually agree with you. You know, I don't know that the robots need human-like shoulders and, you know, and a head and like, I do think that,
yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, it actually, I think the idea is, you know, the more human-like you make it, the less sort of spooky it seems, but it's kind of having the opposite effect on me. I think it feels more spooky almost when it, that effect that it, it sort of does resemble so much of a human. But I mean, I think it depends too on the tasks at hand. I mean, if you're picking up and putting down boxes, you know, maybe having the kind of the joints and arms of a human is something that, you know, this robot needs to produce the task. So I think at the end of the day, these companies are going to settle on a form factor that gets the job done as efficiently and safely as possible. So we'll see. But yeah, I mean, it is at the moment a little dystopian the way some of these robots look.
Yeah, I know. We got to stop watching those movies. Okay, let's talk again another day. Thank you, Jim.
Thanks, John.
More business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Deerfield-based Walgreens is launching a strategic review of the company. The company's CEO made the announcement at a healthcare conference. He says the review, which begins next month, will help align the direction of several segments of the drugstore chain. Among other things, the review will evaluate the role of Walgreens' 8,000 retail locations. This comes as the company's share price drops amid continuing cuts to staff and stiff competition in the drugstore space. Walgreens has already been shrinking its footprint. The Chicago-based spinoff of Kellogg's, Kellanova, has put an ad in a Kansas City newspaper trying to get the attention of pop artist Taylor Swift. The company wants Swift's recipe for homemade Pop-Tarts. Swift reportedly made her version of Pop-Tarts for the Chiefs' offensive line. The Kellanova ad reads in part, "We're tortured not knowing more about this DIY delight. What's the filling? Does it have frosting? Do they have little holes?" Kellanova has made a donation to a Kansas City food bank and has promised a bigger donation if she shares her recipe. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Time for the business of food. Here's Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And we all have memories of our firsts, don't we? First kiss, first car, or...
My first Big Mac on May 17th, 1972.
Yeah, that was just before Don Gorski thought he was going to be drafted.
Just going to see how many Big Macs I could eat before I ended up in Vietnam.
But...
Nixon pulled us out of the war, and then I just kept eating Big Macs.
Almost every day for 52 years. Don will tell us what his current total is after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Okay, Don Gorski, 70 years old from Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. How many Big Macs have you eaten?
Right now I'm at 34,252.
Yeah, he's a world record holder.
I eat two Big Macs every day. I buy six on Monday, and that's good for 3 days, and then I buy eight on Thursday, which is good for 4 days. Sometime after this call is over, I'll microwave one of the Big Macs in the refrigerator, and that'll be my dinner, and then I'll microwave the other one for tonight.
What else do you eat?
Not too much.
Don has two adult sons and four grandchildren, and he says a very understanding wife.
living with me is kind of different. You know, like, there's some things that I do that bug the hell out of her. She's more vegetarian, so she makes whatever she eats herself.
And of those 34,000-plus Big Macs, he's bought most of them at One McD's in Fond du Lac.
When I come in the door, they right away yell, "Don's here."
Kind of like Norm on Cheers?
Right, it's just like that.
Okay, well, how's your health?
Real good. I really don't go to doctors at all because I don't get sick.
He says he's 6'1", 220, appears lanky. Cholesterol?
I've had blood work done, but the highest cholesterol I ever had was 160, and they say that's still pretty low.
Don retired as a maximum security prison guard 13 years ago, and along with bowling and being a handyman for friends and family.
I do a lot of letter writing.
Who do you write to?
Mostly to widows and widowers of prison guards that I work with. So there's at least 10 that I write every day.
Longhand, he does not have a computer nor a smartphone. He wasn't allowed to have them when he was a prison guard and, well, just got used to not having them. Don Gorski, world record holder for Big Mac eating. In 52 years, he has missed only
8
days. Don't you get tired of eating them, Don?
Oh, no, not at all. I hope to keep on going until I croak.
Thank you, Don.
All right, have a good one.
From the farm to your belly, today's National Pound Cake Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Jill O'Donovan, thanks for joining us. You're on WGN. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
What's an impact advisor do? That's what you are at the Y.
That is what I am. I'm working with YWCA USA. I formerly worked with YWCA Metropolitan Chicago here locally. In 2018, we launched an exchange-traded fund for women's empowerment on the New York Stock Exchange in partnership with Impact Shares, a nonprofit investment manager, who was backed by the Rockefeller Foundation to create some socially conscious investment tools.
We talk about ETFs sometimes here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, but just remind us, what is an ETF?
An ETF is very similar to a mutual fund. It holds shares in a select group of companies defined by what the parameters of the ETF are. The YWCA Women's Empowerment ETF holds shares in 200 companies that score highest in their sector on 19 different criteria that the YWCA believes are empowering to women in the workforce.
Criteria that are empowering to women in the workforce. So we're going to invest in businesses that employ women or somehow women benefit from? Is that the idea?
Yes. So there's roughly 4 different categories for these criteria. The first is gender balance in leadership and workforce. And so we look into the gender balance of a board of directors, gender balance on their executive team, in their senior management, and in their overall workforce, and then look at the promotion and career development opportunities for women within those companies. Then we also look at equal compensation and work-life balance factors, including living wage, the gender pay gap, parental leave, and flexible work options. Then we also examine policies promoting to gender equality, such as their different training and career development programs, recruitment strategy, sexual harassment policies, human rights, employee protections. And then we also look at their just general overall commitment to transparency and accountability when it comes to factors that impact women in the workforce. One is whether they're a signatory to the UN's Women Empowerment Principles, and then also whether they've undertaken an audit or been awarded an audit by a gender audit recognized body.
Well, it would seem that money is invested in those kind of companies would benefit those businesses and maybe women there or women in general. But when you think of an ETF, it's an investment tool. So at the end of the day, the bottom line should be the return on that investment, the value of the fund. How does the fund do?
Absolutely. One of our investing hypotheses is that companies that do right by women in the workforce do pretty well. The fund in 2023 returned 27.97%. So it was in the 13th percentile within the large cap blend category. And it beat the Morningstar Women's Empowerment Index, which is what it models against. And over the last, 5 years, so we launched in 2018, it's had a 19.23% annualized total return. So it was in the first percentile in its category.
How does somebody invest in this ETF? Well. How do people put money into that, Jill?
It's available on the stock exchange, on the New York Stock Exchange. You know, you could use retail investors. Your financial advisor should be able to help you connect with the fund. It's readily available to the entire investing public.
And that's the search is WOMN. Do I understand correctly?
Yes, on the New York Stock Exchange. Really? And so, how this benefits the YWCA? The Impact Shares, who is the investment manager who launched the fund, will donate, is a nonprofit himself or itself, and will donate the net advisory fees back to the YWCA to fuel the work that the YWCA does across the country.
Huh.
And in the meantime, the YWCA gets to use this as a tool for engaging companies on these various criteria that we would like to see, companies doing to advance the work that we've been doing for over 160 years, trying to eliminate racism and empower women across the country.
What a novel concept. Maybe it shouldn't be, but it strikes me as unique, and I'm really glad you were able to tell us about that. That's Jill O'Donovan, Impact Advisor to the YWCA. YWCA.org is the website, and if you're doing the search for the ETF, it's WOMN. Jill, thanks for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me.